You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com.
Good evening, everyone. It's just past 7 o'clock on the East Coast, just past 4 o'clock on the West Coast. Everyone can do their own time zone calculations if you don't live in one of those areas. It's time for another episode of On the Vine, the podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com. I'm your host, Peter Andrews. We, as always, have a robust panel of experts joining me this week. First up, co-host Mike Tony. Mike, how's it going?
Good. I look forward to talking about Penn's big win at LaSalle all podcast long.
We're also joined by Ivy Hoops Online writer George Clark, otherwise known as Toothless Tiger. George, how are you?
Very fine, Peter. Welcome to all of you. It's great to be with you.
Making his first appearance on the Vine this year, he covers Harvard for the site. That's Crimson Crawford, otherwise known as Robert Crawford. How's it going, Robert?
It's going great. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And then our special guest this week comes to us from NY Buckets, Big Apple Buckets. I can never remember which one is the actual official name. He is the absolute dean of the NIT, and he's a great basketball writer based in New York. John Templin. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Peter. And it's NYCBuckets.com. Yes.
And then the Twitter account is
NYBuckets, because you wish we could get the right one. It's a long story.
And then on the website page at the top, it says
NYC Buckets. We changed it this year.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm the one who's behind the times. Yeah. Blame me for that. All right. So we had three Ivy games last week. Some of them turned out well. Some of them didn't. We'll touch on all of that as we move on. Let's start by talking about Harvard and Dartmouth, who've got a little bit of the short shaft the last couple of weeks in the program, largely because there hasn't been that much interesting stuff to talk about with them. Let's start with Crimson Crawford. What did you see from the Crimson this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I saw not a full 40 minutes from the Crimson. I mean, they gave up the lead actually at halftime, even though they were up by 11 and in double digits just a few minutes into the game, about 10 minutes into the game. So it was a game that it shouldn't have been as close as it was in the first half. But Harvard was able to pull away, started the second half on a good run. So it's good to get the win, but it's also just a question of if you're playing a better team, you might not be able to recover from that kind of slow stretch. But it was definitely good to start with Dartmouth in the Ivy League and then see if you can iron out some of those wrinkles moving forward.
What do you think, Robert, what do you think the wrinkles are that's causing Harvard difficulty right now in terms of maybe not reaching their full potential?
Yeah, I mean, I think this has been a question we've talked about all year, and it's who's on the court. And I don't think it's necessarily the reason that Harvard had this little collapse at the end of a half. I think that was just being undisciplined and not playing until the buzzer. But I think that there always is, you seem like whenever Harvard has a lead, you look on the court, and it's just not always a cohesive unit, or there's one piece missing. And that sometimes has led, you know, for example, offensive rebounds have been a big problem for Harvard. And Zena Adosuwon, one of the best rebounders in the Ivy League, had played 23 minutes on last time Harvard and Dartmouth played. So it's sometimes just a question of can you have the right guys out there to do what you need to do. But I also, you know, like I said, offensive rebounds and also shot selection I think has been a problem for a few guys, especially Siani Chambers, I think, and Seth Towns. Once those two guys can kind of eradicate the two-point jumper from their game, that will also help a lot.
John, Mike, the rest of the panel, what do you guys think about where the Crimson are at as we start to head into the meat of Ivy play?
Well, I was going to ask real quick, Robert, what are the most effective lineup or lineups that you've seen recently from Harvard? Because much has been made really for a lot of Tommy Amaker's tenure about how he likes to experiment in games and you know try different combinations, and maybe Zena Adosuwon is not playing the minutes that he should. Well, how do you see that? What's the best lineup? I mean, what's the Eureka lineup for Harvard?
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a difference between the best five and the best rotation, because I think Amaker for a long time has done things like he hasn't started the best five, and he's had guys like Jonah Travis was a big example of this, who is Harvard's most effective big man, and he came off the bench, but he just thrived against the second unit. So, for example, Bryce Aiken coming off the bench right now, and he's, you know, arguably Harvard's best offensive player, but he's not in the starting lineup. And I think, but I think when it comes down to it, Zena Adosumon manning the five, and then Siani Chambers, Justin Bassey, Corey Johnson, and I think Bryce Aiken in there is the top five if you need to win a game. But then it's also complicated that you have some, Zena Adosumon has had some free throw shooting trouble. So it's just, there's different situations. Though that would be my five, but I also think that it's about the best rotation and the best lineup for the situation.
Yeah, and I would add odd to that, that it's always a lethal combination in the Ivy League we've seen in recent years when you can couple a really intense, solid defense with equally solid three-point shooting. And this roster definitely has both. You know, Bryce Aiken, and we can maybe talk about this later, just how many awesome freshmen there are in the league this year. But, you know, this is a team that can, you know, not to use a football metaphor, but they can obviously they can stretch you out. But if you're going to be playing kind of a grinded out, low scoring kind of affair, which is what Harvard wants to do against certain opponents, such as how it was able to win at Houston in the signature Ivy win of the entire season so far this year, three-point shooting comes in handy in that sort of moment. And I think that is going to be a huge role in especially in a tournament type of situation when we get to the Palestra in March. That's going to be huge to be able to fall back on a backcourt in particular that can really light it up from three, especially when you're comparing it to you know, teams that have struggled at times from three this season, like Princeton, like Penn. Even Yale has had stretches. Well, we saw it at Brown this weekend where they was started 1-for-15, although they've been a really good three-point shooting team as well. So, yeah, that's a good combination to have, and that's been Tommy Amaker's MO for a while now.
Yeah, I would agree that for those – I've come to this realization over watching Harvard basketball for a few years now, is just that Amaker isn't always playing to win games in November, and that's kind of the sad reality of it. So once we accept that he's playing for something bigger, I guess you just have to trust that he knows what he's doing, but sometimes it can be frustrating.
Trust the process.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a specific Sixers thing. We cannot start applying it willy-nilly to Harvard, of all places. Ludicrous.
Trust the process in Beantown or in Cambridge.
Let's talk about Dartmouth for a second. I want to get Robert's take on, obviously, Dartmouth, new coach, really struggled quite a bit in the early part of the season. Gave Harvard some tough matchups. Where do you think they're at right now as they get ready to travel down the road? They're not a legitimate competitor for the four seed, we have to think, but are they making progress?
You know, I think Dartmouth is a team to me that every year they come in and I think they're going to be better than they are. They have Evan Boudreau, they have Miles Wright, back-to-back Ivy Rookie of the Years, I believe, and they just haven't been able to put it together. So I think they have the pieces. And honestly, I think they're well coached from what I saw, but it just seems like they can never totally put it together. And I think they're well coached because you saw guys that went off for Harvard the first game. I think, I can't remember where I saw this, but someone made a point that Justin Bassey and Chris Lewis dominated the first game for Harvard, and Dartmouth made the adjustments and was able to shut down Bassey and Lewis the second game, but then other guys were able to step up for Harvard. So I think Dartmouth is a well-coached team, and they have good players. I don't honestly know exactly where they go wrong, but when you watch them play, they don't look like a team that can contend for that fourth seed.
this is a
with respect. I'm going to disagree. I do think they can compete. They gave Harvard a couple of pretty good games. Harvard has personnel as deep as any team we've seen in the Ivy League in a long time, and Dartmouth contended. They are well coached. They do have a very positive nucleus going forward. As Michael suggested, they were outgunned. They didn't have enough to hang in there at the end against a much, much better team on paper. I think going forward, Dartmouth can contend. Let's see what they can do with some of the... They're going to play this weekend the other two new coaches in the league. If they can get a win on the road, I think they'll be positioned to contend later on. Perhaps I'm wrong.
So I guess I'm a little skeptical about Dartmouth, this season at least. Especially, I think the coaching change has kind of made their defense a lot worse. The numbers kind of say that, for sure. And I also think the offense is really explosive and can be very good, especially in conference play, obviously, when you have players like Boudreau. But the defense was ultimately what let them down against Harvard, and I think it'll be their problem when they have to come to New York this weekend. And I think it's just going to be the problem generally in league play. I think unless you can play a little bit of defense and get some stops, you're not going to win games. And I just don't see how this Dartmouth team stops anyone.
Yeah, one thing the Big Green can do is they're good, you know, much like Brown, I suppose. They're good at getting to the line, and they did do that against Harvard, which is an indicator that that's something that is going to continue in league play. They also have freshman Brendan Berry leading the league in three-point field goal percentage. So there are some positives there. They're probably the team, to put it very broadly, with the most to prove going into league play, given the 0-9 start and, you know, the getting swept with Harvard. But, you know, I agree to a certain extent with George that, you know, there are definitely some surprises there. It's a team that I think probably can beat anybody in the league except for maybe Princeton, because Princeton dominates lesser competition. I think that, you know, it's year one, and there are going to be some hard moments for the Big Green in league play. But, yeah, I this could be a telling weekend, how competitive they are down the stretch and how much, like John said, how much that defense can hold on.
Yeah, let's talk about this weekend. The Big Green and the Big Red, sorry, Crimson, I guess they prefer to be called, will be the traveling partners this week, as they will be heading to the Seas, Cornell-Columbia. Cornell-Columbia wrapped up their home-and-home series last weekend in Levian, where the Big Red pulled out the revenge victory down the stretch, spoiling Jim Engel's Ivy League home debut. Very beautiful game to watch, both teams in colorful uniforms, which I'm always a fan of. But maybe if you're a Columbia fan, not so much, as Luke Petrasic couldn't really get it going, and then a game that they probably should have won coughed up down the stretch. So let's start by talking to John, who was there. What did you see in this game from both the sort of Columbia perspective and the Cornell perspective?
Well, I think one of the things you kind of touched on right there in the intro is that Columbia is heavily dependent on the offense that Luke Petrasic provides, and the offense has kind of fallen apart when he's not available. And Mike Smith had a really good game and kind of picked up Columbia, and I thought as a freshman, he's doing a better job of recognizing when he has to make plays for the team. But nobody else really stepped up. Nate Hickman had an okay game. He scored 13 points and kind of played all right. But then there was nobody else on offense. Like, I think, you know, Engels is looking for a player like Rodney Hunter or Quentin Adlish to hit some threes, or Lucas Meisner to make something happen in the post, or anything like that. And none of it happened against Cornell. And so I think the other thing, Cornell did a really good job in the revenge game of making sure that they were going to defend the post. They really struggled with that in the first game between these two teams, and there were no easy layups. And on the flip side, Columbia really tried to pressure Cornell and forced 16 turnovers in the first half. So it was a really ugly game. I mean, it was close, but it was ugly in terms of offense. And so I think both of those things show a little bit about each team.
Do you think it's, John, do you think it's more of a case of good defense or bad offense, or is it just a kind of a mismatch of both of those?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually. The Columbia defense has definitely been getting better, so I thought a lot of what they did defensively is kind of them adjusting to Engels' plan, and also Jim Engels doing a better job of adjusting to his personnel as the season goes on. I think he's realizing that he can't do everything he'd love to do defensively, but he's been able to adapt to kind of what his players can do. And then on the Cornell side, I think it was kind of a commitment to the defensive end. And I also think, you know, Columbia missed some shots. And Cornell missed some open threes in the first half of the game as well. So I think both teams, it's a little bit of both.
A question. So I rarely miss Columbia games. I could not watch this one because I was snowed in, as hard as I believe. But, John, did Mike Smith shave his head?
Yes.
Huh.
And he's got a headband now.
I'm looking at the pictures online. It seems like an interesting decision because he had such a distinctive, you know, these are the sorts of things we look for when...
made him incredibly aerodynamic on his full court drives. They were pretty impressive. I mean, he was like his own secondary break. It was pretty cool. But, you know, when Cornell doesn't stop the ball, like if you don't stop the ball against Mike Smith, he's getting to the rim. So it was pretty fun to watch, actually.
Yeah, I want to talk about Mike Smith for a second. We were talking a little bit in the pregame and... I said sort of flippantly I would take Mike Smith over any other rookie in the Ivy League, and I'm not 100% sure that that's true from a non-emotional perspective, let's put it that way. But, you know, Mike Smith in his two Ivy League games has been, you know, I would say he was Columbia's second best player in Ithaca and then was their best player this weekend. He shows a real sort of court vision, and I think Mike touched on this. His awareness is at a level that is very mature for a freshman. He's being asked to carry much more of the offensive load in terms of scoring than I think people expected coming in. So I don't know what the best way to ask this question is. Do we think Mike Smith is getting a fair shake in a league that also has A.J. Broder, Oney, Towns, and the rest of the Harvard freshmen? Are we not looking enough at what Mike Smith is doing as a freshman?
So, I like Mike Smith. I think he's a good player. I think he will be a good player for Columbia. I think his offensive numbers kind of overstate his impact on the game because I think he gives some of it back on the defensive end. Part of that's his height, part of that's being a freshman and just not really knowing exactly where he needs to be. And when I wrote my very, very long piece about Columbia kind of towards the three quarters way of non-conference play, I wrote about his defensive struggles and Columbia was pretty poor defensively when he was on the court. And I think that's a question he still has to answer. But offensively, he's been everything they could have asked for and way more, I would think.
Yeah, I think Mike Smith is one of the most exciting parts of the freshman tapestry of phenomena that we've seen this year from rookies. You look at KenPom, and I wrote about this in our Ivy Weekend Roundup this weekend. Two of the top five Ivy players that KenPom ranks are freshmen, A.J. Broder and Mie Oney. But that's looking at it from a very cold analytical standpoint. I think, you know, Mike Smith is one of the best offensive players in the Ivy League. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But there are other freshmen that I think have been overlooked, too. Chris Lewis is a really efficient player, leads the conference in field goal percentage. You know, I mentioned Brendan Berry earlier. There's freshman Justin Bassey. I'm sure Robert will tell you has played some really critical defense in certain spots this season. You can broaden that out to underclassmen. You can throw in, you know, Devin Kennedy, you can throw in Miles Stevens, Matt Morgan, Evan Bedreau. There are a lot of great underclassmen, and I guess it does speak to the strength of the league right now, where a talent like Mike Smith is in fact flying under the radar on a team that has, you know, a good chance to make the Ivy tournament and should be considered a middle tier team. It's not like he's on a bad team that's languishing away.
I would also say, like, Mike James has written a lot about this on Twitter too, but this is a historically good freshman class. So we're not saying, like, if this was your average freshman class, I feel like Mike Smith would be one of the top one or two players in that class. But considering all the kids that Harvard has and some of the other talent around the league, it's just a little harder to kind of figure out where everyone slots in, I feel like.
Well, let me ask you, so you mentioned Twitter, and I wanted to find a transition here. Before we move on to talking about what both Cornell and Columbia need to do this weekend to, you know, we're this battle for the four spot, which is really starting to heat up, I want to ask you, John, if you could weigh in a little bit on, so last week on the program, we had a pretty intense discussion about Kyle Smith, and I don't want to keep relitigating 2016, but there was some chatter on Twitter about the way the panel talked about Kyle Smith, and particularly in light of, I saw this week that Kyle Smith's San Francisco squad has made the largest jump by some metrics of any team from sort of where they were projected to be this year to where they ended up. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about what you see as Kyle Smith's legacy. Do you think he was a good coach? Do you think he overperformed? What can you say about Kyle Smith's legacy?
Sure. I mean, I'm obviously a Kyle Smith defender, and I think that what he was handed when he got to Columbia in the first place was not particularly impressive, and he spent a lot of time building up the program, and the 2015 season was kind of a bummer, but the 2016 and 2014 seasons are two of the best seasons in Columbia history, and in fact, probably the best seasons in modern Columbia history. So I know that that's kind of a, well, great because Columbia's history is not that great, but I also think, like, a CIT championship is not something to take lightly, and that team performed very well. And I also think Kyle Smith is an excellent offensive coach. His defensive philosophies I question a little bit, but I think, like, he was able to get a lot out of a number of players and build some really impressive teams. And sure, that, like, maybe there were some injuries and things like that. Like, Grant Mullins is playing great in Cal this season, but Grant Mullins basically was injured his entire time at Columbia. So there are, like, questions like that, and we'll never know what would have happened if he had everyone healthy. But I feel like, overall, he did a great job here.
I am offended, John, that you would suggest that any Columbia success prior to this year was evidently prehistoric. I go back to a time when Jack Rohan had Jim McMillan, Dave Newmark, and Hayward Dotson.
George, no one else on this call was alive.
No one else was alive then. But that's not before modern history began. That Columbia team was as good as any Ivy League team, perhaps since its inception. But that's a minor point. I understand what you're saying, John, and I certainly agree with you. And I am also one who respected Kyle Smith at all times. I don't ever recall as a Princeton fan going into a Columbia game the last couple of years thinking this will be an easy ball game, and most of them weren't. And I hope he does very well out of the West Coast, and I'm sure he will. He's comfortable there. It's really where he's from, and that's a great conference with a lot of good programs.
Yeah, really, I mean, as George really mentioned, there were some really good teams in the late 60s for Columbia, of course. But after that, like, you get to 2015-16, and if you use simple rating system, which is kind of using a hammer to kind of figure out the answer, but I feel like that's the closest we can get, and I think, you know, that season last season was really impressive, and it's not Kyle Smith's fault that last year's Yale team was one of the best teams in Ivy League history, so it's kind of tough to figure out, like, what would have happened maybe under normal or circumstances.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about, so we have this weekend set of matchups. We have Harvard and Dartmouth doing the long trip back and forth between Ithaca and Manhattan. So we can talk about all four of these teams. What is sort of the the goal for each team this weekend? What do you guys see as realistic? You know, if you're looking at it, I think both Columbia and Cornell need to beat Dartmouth. No question, win that home game if they're going to stay pace. And then, you know, if you can... I don't know. Do we see it as realistic that one of the C's will pull an upset this weekend? Where are we at heading into the pace?
I mean, I see it as very realistic. I'll say Harvard playing against Cornell and Columbia this weekend. I mean, I think it's Harvard's playing two games they're favored to win, but they're going to go on the road in the Ivy League, which is always tough. And, you know, neither team is a pushover. Last year, obviously, it's different teams, but Matt Morgan went for 27 points and 33 points against Harvard in their two games last year. So they got to find a way to stop Matt Morgan. And, I mean, it's two tough road games. If Harvard can't play, you know, full 40 minutes in two games, I think they have a real shot at being upset, and their goal has got to be to win two games too. That would be huge coming into a big home weekend with Penn Princeton. So I think Harvard's goal is to go 2-0, but it's very possible we see an upset.
Of course, for Cornell to win tomorrow night would be a major upset. I'm going to travel to Ithaca. It's actually a shorter trip for me to go up 81 to Ithaca than it is for me to get to Princeton. So I haven't seen any live action in quite a while because of that damn reading period. So I'm anxious to see a game. And Kevin Whitaker was one of several people who floated the theory online this week that Cornell might be better somewhat without Robert Hatter. And I don't know what his status is going into this weekend. He was hurt last week, and it looked to be a very serious injury. But that there may be something to that. Hatter is a marvelous player, and he's a good shooter. It seems to be his shot selection leaves much to be desired, and certainly in Brian Earle's system. And perhaps they'll play a little bit more patiently if they're forced to play without Hatter this weekend. And that's going to isolate and certainly put the focus on Matt Morgan, who, my Lord, can rise to the occasion, as Robert just suggested last year against Harvard. He exploded. And he could do that at any time. And playing at home with fourth place clearly in sight is going to make this a very interesting weekend for Cornell, for Columbia, and for Dartmouth.
I think... one of the things I will say from watching Cornell play against Columbia on Saturday is that the one thing with Hatter being out is that I don't know if any of the Cornell players are comfortable with having the ball in their hands for large extended periods of time. And I think that's a lot of why you see the turnovers. The shot selection is definitely better. And I think Matt Morgan, you know, definitely rose to the occasion and played great on Saturday. So it'll be interesting to see how they do against Harvard, who has a lot of athletes and can also defend. And it'll be challenging, I think. And to go for Columbia and what they're looking for this weekend, yeah, the split's okay. And if you can get two, that would be amazing. But this is also Jim Engels' first Ivy League weekend, back-to-back. And I'm really interested to see how he coaches and manages rotation.
Yeah, that's the one thing I'm looking forward to, is seeing how these first-year coaches do. Real quick, just Dartmouth, since we didn't talk a lot about them last week. This is, you know, they started the year 0-9. They ended that streak on the road. Going on the road again this weekend is going to be... They can definitely get a win out of this. You know, again, I agree with George that there can certainly be an upset there. You know, they're very capable of it. If you get to the line, that's steady pickings. And if you want to show that the program is on an uptick, this would be a great weekend to show it.
Well, and if you look at recent Columbia history, this last home weekend, losing to Cornell actually snapped a streak. The Columbia had not lost to any Ivy teams other than Yale or Princeton in 2016. But 2 years ago, Dartmouth pulled off the sweep against Columbia. They won in Hanover, and they won one of the most disgusting games of basketball I've ever seen in Levian. And I mean disgusting in the sense of There were like 50 billion turnovers, and both teams shot like 25%. It was very ugly.
Don't forget the Palestinian referee.
I'm not sure what that means.
Oh, oops, oops. Think about it, Peter.
I'm going to think about it in a few minutes once I process that. All I'll say is that Dartmouth certainly has the chance to pull off some upsets. Let's talk a little bit real quick about...
Before you leave that point.
Yeah.
Dartmouth has been denigrated somewhat here, and perhaps because of an 0-9 start, they deserve to be. But Dartmouth played long stretches against Harvard in both ball games, which suggested to me they could contend with any other team in the league on any given night.
I don't disagree at all.
I really think they're very much in the thick of it in the battle for fourth place. They lost two games to Harvard. Well, that doesn't surprise anybody, and those are two games they no longer have to play. So I think the schedule in the long run may favor them. Certainly when you consider Penn, for instance, 0-3 and having to start next week on the road at Harvard, they have a very long uphill climb ahead of them, and it's going to be very difficult.
My concern with Dartmouth, George, is just that I don't know if they can sustain it for 40 minutes, and if they can't get those stops they need during those times where their offense goes cold, you're going to end up with scores that don't look bad, but are still losses, is my concern.
Yeah, very, very good point. Certainly that was the case against Harvard.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk, and then we'll wrap up. Let's talk a little bit about this Yale-Brown matchup, as this is the weekend where everyone, as everything evens out a little bit, we're wrapping up the last of the travel partners and getting set for the all eight teams to have full weekends next weekend. Any chance that Brown pulls the upset here? They've certainly been playing very well recently.
Brown has played better in New Haven against Yale than at the Piz the last couple of years. So it was interesting to see it go down to the wire last weekend. I think that I'm going to say no, it can't happen. just because if it was going to happen, it was going to happen in a game in which Stephen Spieth just goes off and Yale starts 1-for-15 from three. I feel like that was the perfect storm. I feel like, Yale pressed its advantage with Sam Downey in the paint, to the tune of 26 points and 13 rebounds, but maybe even left a little bit on the table, and I think they'll try to work it inside a little more at Payne Whitney than they did last weekend. I don't know. I mean, I'll use this space to give, further kudos to Mike Martin for the situational coaching that he did in that game to get the Bears, keep them in it down the stretch after they faded a little bit in the second half after that 40-28 halftime lead. It's a good team. I don't think it's really... I know we went through the same thing last year with Cornell, where they had that really good first weekend against Harvard and Dartmouth, and then they just tailed off. I feel like Brown has a more varied offensive personnel grouping that will allow them to not tail off that dramatically as last year's Big Red squad did. So yeah, they're in the thick of the Ivy race. I don't think it was a fluke that they were able to knock out Penn at the Palestra and take Yale to the wire, but I also don't think that they will be able to pull it off this weekend at Yale, which I don't think is all that incriminating.
I agree with that, Michael. I watched the game on Ivy League Digital Network, the Yale Brown game last weekend, and I don't know that you could play a better half than Brown did in the opening period of that ball game. 40-28 was just incredible. Yale scored 22 points against Princeton, and Princeton only scored 24, and Brown scored 40. To suggest that they faded a little bit in the stretch is perhaps understating what happened. They just went stone cold for 5 or 8 minutes to start that second half, and nevertheless were in it right to the end. So Brown, again, is as scary a team to play as any in the league. They lost to Yale, they've lost to Princeton, games they figured to lose. They're very much alive in the battle for the fourth spot, and if they have a hot night in the tournament, they could beat anybody.
Yeah, well, I don't
we'll
know.
We'll see what happens.
I don't know if Brown's going to win at Yale, but I agree with George that I think Brown's right in it for the fourth place in the Ivy League. I think they obviously have a great offense with Spieth, and they could compete with anyone. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes, but winning at Yale is kind of a tough ask.
Did anyone else see the broadcast on ILDN, especially the feature at halftime on Stephen Spieth and his brother, Jordan Spieth? It was fascinating and very entertaining and simply delightful.
Yeah, they've got, and Stephen Spieth has got to be considered a front runner for Ivy Player of the Year, I would think. I mean, he absolutely stuffs the stats pretty much every game. His team is very reliant on his success. He does it all. You could see his on the floor leadership in that game against Yale, him trying to get the defense situated after his game tying three, the tie to the 74 late after a really nice setup. I'm assuming by Mike Martin or someone on the coaching staff, probably Coach Martin. It's a great run, and who's to say he's not an equal athlete in the family?
Yeah, it's quite a. I actually have to say that connection is one that has been mentioned to me by people who all they know about is that I care about Columbia basketball. They're like, oh, did you know that Brown has Jordan Spieth's brother on their team? It's a small world. Yeah. Let's take 2 minutes to talk about A.J. Broder and the Penn LaSalle game, and then we're going to call it an evening, because I think Mike will get mad at me if we don't. So, big win for Penn, I guess?
Yeah, a little bit. It was their first road big five win in a very long time. I think you have to go back to 2007 if I remember correctly. It was a little perplexing that AJ Broder wasn't doubled a lot in that game. I would think if I was game planning for Penn, the first thing I would do is tell my front court in particular, that we're going to be doubling this guy every time he touches the ball, and playing aggressive defense on him, making him give it up, a la that screenshot that Kevin Whitaker took of Yale having five players around him at the Palestra in that game, just trying to frustrate him. And then he just went off. He went 35 points, 3 for 4 from 3-point range, which John pointed out before we started up the show, that how interesting is that he was able to do that. It's Penn's got wins now at UCF and LaSalle. it's been an interesting non-conference run for Penn this year, and maybe that's what they need. It doesn't count in the Ivy standings. But it could count as a shot in the arm that will ultimately affect the Ivy standings in some way if Broder can get this going a little bit and get these guys on track. Matt Howard hit a big three late in that game. When Broder and Howard are both clicking, this is an offense that is actually somewhat formidable. you know, compared to the long stretches of Ivy play where they haven't been. It still comes down to whether or not they can get one of their designated three-point shooters going, I think. You know, LaSalle win or no LaSalle win. If they can't get these guys, you know, they've got a lot of players that are able to shoot on this team. We've went through them before. Jones, Donahue, Wood, McDonald, you know, these guys, even Howard. Hey, I guess Brodeur can shoot threes too. So, you know, it's going to come down to whether or not this offense can stretch defenses as per Donahue's, Steve Donahue's, that is, MO of, you know, we beat him inside or we beat him from three. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. But, hey, that's the best possible outcome you could want after they hung with St. Joseph's sort of down the stretch at the Palestra. So, you know, I thought this was a refreshing Big Five detour for Penn as they get back on track. And, you know, I think they'll be ready to, you know, have a good opening sequence at Harvard, which they absolutely did not have last year. So hopefully they can get that going, because, you know, as Peter knows, it's always more entertaining in the Ivy League if Penn is good, right?
No, that's what we in the that's what we in the business call alternative facts.
Okay.
All right, we'll leave it there because I don't want to get in a fight with Mike about this. Suffice to say, the Ancient Quaker, if you're listening, fight me. We will wrap up the show here. It's been another great episode on the Vine. I enjoyed having everyone on the program. It's always good to get a chance. In particular, I want to thank John Templin, who I used to, you know, when I used to live in New York, John and I were press row buddies, and now I get to talk to him once a year on Skype. And so, John, remind us where we can find all your stuff.
Yeah, on Twitter we're NYBuckets, and if you want to read everything, especially Kevin Whitaker's great coverage of the Ivy League, you should go to nycbuckets.com.
Great. Thanks very much for coming on the program, John.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys.
And then our IHO writers, Robert Crawford, thanks so much for providing the Crimson perspective, and we'll be sure to have you back on sometime again as things heat up down the stretch here.
Thanks so much, guys. Always happy to be on. It was a good time.
George Clark, our resident Princeton man, have a safe trip to Ithaca this weekend.
Thank you very much. It can be iffy traveling to Ithaca at this time of year, believe me. Let me say personally thanks to John Templin for being here. Kevin Whitaker was here last week. I think it adds quite a bit of credibility to this podcast to have people who are so good at what they do in college basketball. So thanks for being here, John, and I hope we get together again real soon.
I hope I get to talk lots more Ivy League. So.
Well, I like to contrast John and Kevin's credibility with my own, and in that case, I think George is perfectly right. So, and let's say thank you to the director of IvyHoopsOnline.com, Mike Tony. Mike, thanks for coming on the program, and thanks for not wearing an orange shirt this week.
Yes, I tried to make it light blue. I couldn't swing it, but I'll take it. I'll echo George's sentiments, and yeah, it should be. It should be interesting. Underclassmen rule the league. Yay, let's go.
Okay, that was bizarre. All right, we'll be back sometime. We'll be back around the same time next week as we wrap up this weekend and get excited for the full-on schedule of all 8 teams playing back-to-backs that kicks off in the subsequent week. I've been Peter Andrews. Thank you so much for listening on The Vine, and we will see you later.